Well, thank you all for welcoming me here today to be with you. So appreciate it. Thank you, Carrie, for the wonderful meditation. What a great way to get ourselves here, right? So nice. Thank you, Daniel, for the music. Loving it. Thank you, Valerie, for your introductions. I love the team approach. And I want to thank Brad, too, just because he sets up the themes that those of us who step in get to work with. So just so delighted to be with you. Thank you, thank you. And today we're going to think about what the world needs now, which is angels. I know, it's a little woo-woo, right? A little woo-woo. But you invite me here, and that's where I go. So you're going with me. Because I'm always one who's leaning into the mystical, into the imagination, into what's not exactly definable, but things that are experienced in the heart. So just to start us off, I want us to think a little about the structure of the world. So from a shamanic or indigenous understanding, first part of our experience in this life is this. This plane of interaction with people. It's me, it's you, it's bumping into people who we love, people who we disagree with. It's the daily kind of grind of our lives. And in the Quechua word for that is ke pacha. Pacha is the Quechua word for earth or world. So the ke pacha is this experience, which is really a great experience that we're having. But the shamanic or indigenous understanding also takes very seriously what they call the Hanuk Pacha, which is the world above, the Hanuk Pacha. And that includes all of the things that inspire us, these celestial energies, the sun, the moon, the planets, where we come from, all of the guides, things that guide us. So in a shamanic understanding, as I'm navigating this world, I get to pull in some of those resources to help my heart expand, heal, whatever it needs. Those are there. But also, there's another level, which is below our feet. And that's called the Uhu Pacha. Now, those of you who are raised in a Christian tradition, you might have another name for that place. Because unfortunately, we've been conditioned to think of heaven and hell. And those of us who really want to move away from those dichotomies, we tend to reject it all. So I'm going to invite us today to kind of not reject it all, but to redefine it and see if things like angels could be part of what helps us cope during this time of our life existence. You know, we're just so heavy in our heads often that we need these avenues to open up our hearts. So journey with me a bit on this woo-woo adventure. So today we're going to talk a bit about the theology of angels, where these concepts and stories come from. We're going to reflect on maybe a bit about, can they exist? Do they exist? I'm going to tell you a story from my own life. And then hopefully we'll all be encouraged just to open up a little more to how the mystical can guide us. So we're going to start actually with a song that it's a call and response just to get us into our hearts. I think music does that quicker than anything, gets us out of our heads and into our hearts. So a call and response, it's an old spiritual. I sing a line, you sing it back to me. And I know, luckily Daniel's already got us doing a little singing today, so we'll see how we do with this. So it goes like this, and you can like snap or often we would tap our hearts to the rhythm to open our hearts. So, you can do it here, you can do it here, you can snap along, whatever you'd like. So it goes like this. Up above my head, up above my head, I hear music in the air.
I hear music in the air.
Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Well, up above my head, I hear music in the air. And I really do believe there are angels somewhere. Everywhere I go, I hear music in the air. Everywhere I go, I hear music in the air. Everywhere I go, I hear music in the air. And I really do believe there are angels somewhere. Now make this next one like a little secret to yourself as you whisper it. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Well, up above my head, I hear music in the air. Well, up above my head, I hear music in the air. And I really do believe there are angels somewhere. And I really do believe there are angels somewhere. Nice deep breath. Yay! We sang together. How fun. Thank you. Today I could spend a lot of time talking about the stories of the angels. They are endless in mythology, in Christian tradition, in Jewish tradition, Islamic tradition. Angels appear in all kinds of stories. And trust me, there are many, many. Now the word from the Greek is angelos, and it technically means messenger. So angelos gets translated into angels, but the core word is messenger. So often when the angels appear, like especially this time of year, if you're familiar with the Christmas narrative, you have messengers who are coming to announce the birth of John the Baptist. You have messengers who are announcing to Mary and Joseph all the things that are going to be happening. You have the messengers out with the shepherds, right? You know those stories. They're all coming with messages. So as we think about angels, this concept of angels, we think of it, first of all, as a messenger. Now, much of what we think of as angels, we want to deconstruct a little too. A lot of it's been taught from actually Thomas Aquinas, who was a Catholic theologian around 1250 after the birth of Christ. He, for whatever reason, developed a huge theology of angels that began to be taught through the church to, and it comes down to us really, handed down. So I thought it would be kind of interesting. I found it a fascinating journey because I'm up here. You get to go on the journey with me to discover a little about this hierarchy or this theology of angels. So building on Thomas Aquinas, he said that there were three clusters of these messengers or I guess you could call them kind of ways that the divine would work with us or bring us information. So some of these will be familiar terms. So way up here, he had three tiers of angels, and they're the closest to the divine. So they carry the most information or message of what the divine intends. So they are the seraphim and the cherubim. You've heard those words, right? The seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, which I know we don't think of thrones as like angelic, but let me tell you what they mean. The seraphim are those beings that are just aglow. They carry light. The cherubim are those who are the knowledge bearers. Ooh, an angel just came with a message. The cherubim carry the knowledge of God, and the thrones carry the what Thomas Aquinas called the justice of God, or that sense of the right way of doing things. So you can see it, right? The light, the knowledge, and the justice. The next tier down had three kinds of messengers. There is dominion, virtue, and powers. Dominion would be those messengers that help and command kind of right action. You know how you're going through life and you kind of wonder, oh, is this a good decision or not, or is this ethical or not? That would be the dominions at work. The virtues are those angelic beings that not only encourage right action, but give you the courage to take the right action. I like that, that there are beings that are encouraging us. And third in that tier is the powers, which is the order of province. So it sort of takes that the thrones, the justice, and helps us see that there is a pattern and an order to things. All right, we got a third tier yet from Thomas Aquinas, and these would be those angelic beings or messengers that are directly responsible for human activity. So you've got those that are really connected to the divine, and these three are ours. So first, there is the principalities, which are the beings that oversee the general welfare of nations, the world. Next, there are the archangels. Now, I know that that's a familiar term for you. The archangels are looking out for human good, not yours in particular, but the bigger picture of humanity. So you've got them overlooking the nations, overlooking what it means to be human. And third, you have just angels, which are believed to be your individual sense of God or divinity or whatever that might be in you. Now, in our culture, you've heard of guardian angels, right? And so that would be that tier, but it's a little different than we've been taught, I believe. You know how, well, maybe I'll get to that in a second. So let me get to that in a second. We're just going to imagine it, though. So during this time when this theology was all being taught, you'll find it reflected everywhere in artwork. There are angels that start to appear in all the big artwork that exists. Angels never had wings until they appeared in that realm of artwork. Before that, they were just messengers who showed up that looked like, you know, you or me. And the wings appeared eventually. It was also very common that those who were, you know, saints and guides in the church received visions from angels or received direct access from angels. And these are all things that, you know, you can easily search online if you were interested. So then what happens is that's guiding our thought about angels for quite some time. And it's held for a few centuries until the Protestant Reformation, which was about in the 1500s. And the Reformation had really very little need to inquire into anything mysterious. It was all sort of, the Reformation wanted to push it aside. So you had this whole idea, religious idea, that we were steeped and surrounded by these messengers, and suddenly you had the Reformation coming in and saying, no, it's not going to happen. So, in fact, John Calvin, who I studied, I'm not going to say it as proudly as that sounds, because at one point I professed I actually believed all of these things so that I could be ordained as a minister.
John Calvin was interested in angels, but only in the fallen angel. The Lucifer, dum, 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 dum. It's my sound effects, not John Calvin's. But the kingdom of Lucifer, dum, 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 was always at warfare with the kingdom of God. That whole idea didn't even enter our consciousness until really around the Reformation, that there were these other angels and these angels, and they were always in warfare with one another. Now, the concept of fallen angels, of Lucifer or Satan, it's affected a lot of us who were raised in that tradition, right? We were taught about that realm being unacceptable. So part of, you know, what happens is this warfare between Lucifer and the other angels is really a warfare of who owns our soul. And we often want to just discount it all. I don't want to believe that. I don't want to believe in a hell. So, and does that then mean I can't believe in angels? You know, so we wipe it all clean, right? Many of us wipe it all clean. So I'm taking us back to the whole indigenous idea that both of those things, above and beneath, are resources. And granted, we kind of have to clear out some of the rubble that John Calvin left us behind and find what's true for us. So now we're going to fast forward in history a bit to the turn of the century in the 1900s. So we've had this whole hierarchy of messengers, angelic beings, pushed aside by the Reformation. The turn of the century in the 1900s finds this surge of spirituality, this push towards the mysterious, towards the unknown. This is, again, something that can be researched endlessly. But I wanted to tell you particularly about someone who wrote a lot during that time, Rudolf Steiner. Some of you might know some of his books. He was so prolific in his writings, but everything that he was interested in was about moving us, all of us, into imagining again the mysteries. So he wrote books like The Philosophy of Freedom, Life Between Life and Rebirth, Spiritual Hierarchies in the Mystical World, An Esoteric Study of the Lord's Prayer, How to Know Higher Worlds. I mean, on and on the list goes, and again, the internet's a fabulous place. If you're interested, you'll see endless books by Rudolf Steiner. And one of Steiner's many ideas had to do with angels. He says, what happened to the angels? Like, why were they so important in all the old stories, and now we've discounted them, pushed them out right along with the fallen angels? So he points to our evolution as a human race, and this made me think of Brad's talk from last week about how do we evolve? We're swimming in this crazy waters. How does the soul evolve? That's something Rudolf Steiner thought about a lot. And he points to this fact that in our evolution, humankind has been separated from the natural world. We're just living in our heads, ideas, thoughts, concepts, and we've forgotten how the whole natural world can inform us. And certainly shamanic belief would say the same thing. So there leaves like no space for what's unconscious. Angels, in Steiner's thought, would be vital to our evolution that we would again embrace mysteries. So he said that angels bring us three things. One, and maybe most importantly, is a strong impulse toward unity. That's what angels bring, a strong impulse toward unity. That if there is my ability to be happy is really dependent on your ability to be happy, or our ability as a human race. I can't reach unity without you. This dismantling of a misuse of power is so much a part of this impulse toward unity, Steiner would say. We have to dismantle personal power. We have to dismantle sexual power. We have to dismantle corporate power in order for us to reach into unity. And in such an impulse toward unity, there is no fallen angel. There is only light and dark. There is only this sense that the light and the dark is in me, in you, in everything, that things balance, weigh out. It's the way of the natural world, light and dark, all of it in unity. So that's the first thing he said angels bring to us. The second is that they bring a recognition of the divinity in the other, and not just the other person, but the divinity in every living creature, every plant, every sacred place on this earth. It brings us into that divinity. And there is no way we can be separate, because if I see the divinity in you, then how can I be separate from you? How can I judge you? How can I not lean in toward unity, right? The third thing angels bring is this possibility of gaining insight through, he called it thinking, but it's a thinking that's infused with our heart and our will, which is also very, very shamanic in its understanding. So in this kind of expanded way to see the world, not as like good and evil, not as things that just are woo-woo, but in this ability to see the world as unified and us in it, we have to know in expanded openness, there is no judgment. There is no dark angel dum 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 tempting you. It isn't in the existence of this other kind of understanding of the world. And this desire for us to be conscious enough to assist with unity unfolding, it's so important. Now I'm going to come back for a moment to the guardian angels. Because if we each have an angel, according to the theology, and I kind of like that idea, what it's saying is that when we come into this world, into this bodily form, that our soul comes with us. And that the being or the messenger that brings our soul into this world is angelic. It's our guardian angel. And then when we take this physical form, our guardian angel separates from us and is there through our life. In the Greek understanding, this being that's accompanied us would be called a daimon. I like that idea because it broadens it beyond just angel. This daimon that is part of our soul story. Now, again, we're conditioned to think that guardian angels are that which protects us, right? Like children all have a little guardian angel, and there's a lot of artwork that will show that. But the reality is that terrible things happen to children. Terrible things happen in this world. Children are abused. Children die from disease. You know, where's their guardian angel? And you know what? Terrible things happen to us as adults. Things that we have to struggle with. Things that you would think if there was a guardian angel, they'd be doing something about it. But you see, that daimon, that guardian angel, isn't there to stop life from happening. It's there to open our heart so that we can meet whatever it is our soul is here to meet. You see the difference? Are we getting it? It's not, angels aren't this like out there thing that's going to make stuff happen. It's this thing, this messenger of our heart that helps us open as we align to it, as we're willing to draw from the unconscious beneath our feet and heal those parts of us that are a little harder, and as we're able to access these serendipitous events, there is our daimon, our guardian angel, our very soul, opening, stretching, allowing something more. Oh, may that be true for us. So a very quick story from my own life, which happens when my son was 19, and he had a tumor growing inside his spinal cord, which is a terrible place to have a tumor, inside your spinal cord. It's very hard to have a surgery around it. It was affecting his legs. His legs were atrophying. So we took him to Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and there was a doctor there who had seen this before, was able to do the surgery. But the story that I want to tell you happens because we didn't know what would happen for my son. But he was transferred to the therapeutic hospital, and he was, you know, the hospital's here. There's a hotel across the way where all the people who have people staying there can live. And then down the street, there's a coffee shop. So this was my whole life, this little triangle for weeks, right? The coffee shop, my hotel, my son's room. And this is a poem called "The Sky Is What I Want to Tell You About." Now I'm remembering a day when my footsteps were as heavy as my head, full of unknowns. And before I tell you about that day, I want you to know that the story turns out fine. Everyone is fine. It was just that day, that moment, that breath, and I couldn't exhale. I'm remembering a day when my son lay in a hospital bed. And I'm remembering how I invent a routine to cope with the days of his recovery from surgery. Because don't we all try to create the familiar when there are tremors beneath our feet and we must survive right where we are? I rise early from my hotel sleep, exchange coins for a good cup of coffee, because the cafeteria coffee was not that good. I would walk the short distance to the hospital as doctors and nurses and aides all pour in the door with me to face whatever the day holds. For 5 days, I clutch my morning coffee like a prayer. And the sixth day was Saturday, the weekend. And suddenly, there was no line at the coffee shop. There was no bustle of staff at the elevator. Everyone else was home on the weekend. Yet my abode was the small chair next to the bed where my son worked to heal. On this day, the sixth day, with coffee in hand, I pilgrimed toward the hospital, my eyes downcast, the furrow on my brow so deep. You'd think I was divining the future from the laces of my shoes. I couldn't see any further. Did I mention that there was no one else on the street that day? And suddenly, a voice says, "Hey, you okay?" I look up, and there's a young man coming toward me. A kind young man, he gazes at me. "You know," he intones and smiles, "you just have to keep looking up." He walks past me. I stop my journey. Was he really wearing a trench coat? I turn to look, and there is no one there. The sky is what I want to tell you about on a day when the earth was heavy. So, my friends, if you're willing, start looking up. When we realize that really nothing has changed, the sun is still making its way, the moon, the stars, it's all there. Maybe there's changes in my world, my little heart, but I can rely on this wisdom, this messenger from above that reminds me to keep looking up. Let us lift our gaze. Let us be open to mystery. Let us follow the impulse of the angels toward unity, toward heart, toward becoming all we can be in this world.